I couldn't remember whether it was this time last year, but I remember it was really sunny. And you got the fantastic fields and all the cake. Cake at the start, cake. And I think one time I came, I had some blueberry muffins, and you had a choice between the raisin or the muffin, but that's another message, and so on. I've got probably four or five scriptures I want to read at the start right now, and hopefully you'll find that there's a connecting theme. So the first one is in Ephesians chapter 3, I think it is. No, it's chapter 4, Ephesians 4. Verse 1, and then we're going to go into 2 Corinthians chapter 3, and then over into Matthew. So Ephesians 4, verse 1. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to lead a life worthy of the calling with which you were called. If you just put this phrase on the back burner. Lead a life worthy of the calling with which you were called. And then over back a bit into 2 Corinthians chapter 3. Just come in at verse 1. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 1. Do we again need to commend ourselves? Or do we need, as some others, letters of commendation to you, or letters of commendation from you? You are our letter, written in our hearts, known and read by all people. You are manifestly a letter of Christ, ministered by us, written not with ink, but by the Spirit of the living God, and not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of flesh, that is, of the heart. And then back again into Matthew's Gospel, Matthew 13, we haven't got time to go through the parable, but Jesus told a story about wheat and weeds growing up together. And I've just been out with, I think it was Charlie maybe, showing me the garden at the back, you know, explained it beautifully and so on. Wheat and weeds growing up side by side. And Jesus told a story about this field. Which he when he gave the interpretation of the parable, said this. The disciples came to him and said, "Tell us what the parable of the weeds of the field means." He said to them, verse 37, Matthew 13, "He who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seeds are the sons or daughters of the kingdom, but the weeds are the sons of the wicked one." Just note that there, that the field is the world, not the church. I know some traditions, people get raised with this whole thing that the church is going to be full of mixture, and you just don't know who the Christians are because you've got the weeds and the wheat all growing together. Well, actually, Jesus just puts all that to rest and says, the field is the world, not the church. The field is the world. And then thirdly, in Philippians chapter 2, verse 14, "Do all things without grumbling and complaining." Anyone heard God yet? "Do all things without grumbling and complaining, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as stars or lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I've not run in vain or labored in vain." Okay, we'll stop there on the readings. I haven't got anything particularly deep or profound to say in one sense, but despite my brother's introduction, the Holy Spirit causes us to see the obvious things in a new way. That's what revelation is, isn't it, really? And I want to say a little bit about particularly that phrase, living a life worthy of the call. God's call to us to live a life. I don't have a Christian life. I have a life. You often say, well, in the Christian life, well, what other kind of life have you got? You're called to live a life loving God and loving people. Very interesting, that last couple of verses that we read, where Paul said to the church there, he said, live amongst a crooked and perverse generation, hold out the word of life, shine like stars, in case I've laboured in vain. The last thing Paul wanted was to father churches that couldn't relate to people outside of church, or had this kind of Christian ghetto existence where they kind of went to work and came home, or the only friends they ever had were Christians, and they were lived their lives as Christians, and they were buried as Christians, and. Paul said, I don't want to feel like I've laboured in vain. Live amongst. Now, we don't have the same values as the world, but we are to live amongst a crooked, a perverse generation. Live a life worthy of the call. Live a life worthy of the call. Every Christian is a called Christian. Well, I'm not a prophet, I'm not a pastor, I'm not an evangelist, I'm not an administrator, I haven't got the gift of healing, I haven't got the gift of blah, 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 blah. What is my calling? What is my calling? You're called, I'm called, you're called, we are called to live a life of love towards God and towards people. Amen. Love the Lord your God. I told you, it's not deep stuff. Love God and love people. And love people as you love yourself. Live a life worthy of the call. You can just do a little review of the beginning of the letters. Paul would often say, to those who are called. You're called. Every Christian is a called Christian. Not just called by name, but called to. Called to love God and love people. It's very interesting, isn't it? I do think a lot. Perhaps sometimes I think too much, but I'm really sorry about that, because words fascinate me, and language often is a revelation of the heart. And so I hear sometimes different things. People say, I did some witnessing. Okay, if you're not a Christian, that means when Christians, they come and speak to you and they're trying to get you to buy into what they believe. So if you're here and someone does that today, that's what's going on, okay? And the Christian culture calls it witnessing. I did some witnessing. And yet, nowhere does Paul say to Timothy or the church, he says, make sure the church does some witnessing. Stops them getting inward looking. There's nowhere. There's hardly any commands about evangelism. You know, just make sure, you know, Timothy, you've got to watch those churches. You know what? They'll eat cake, they'll drink tea, and they'll get so sloppy and inward looking they won't. It's none of that. Paul assumes that people are living a holistic lifestyle and outlook, so that it's no strange thing for Paul to say, be devoted in prayer and have some choice words for outsiders. Let your speech be seasoned with salt. It's not flipping between secular and sacred, church, world. It's life. You don't have this kind of schizophrenic idea of, I'm a Christian. Oh, now I'm in the world. And now I'm doing a bit in the world. And now I'm in the church on Sundays. And I'm going to do some witnessing. You can't do witnessing. You are a witness. You are a witness. If you know Jesus, love Jesus, you're a witness to resurrection life. You are a witness. Testimony is when you open your mouth and let people know about your life. Me and Bernie, someone will say to me, maybe my kids might ring up tonight and say, how was your day? I say, well, we had a wonderful time in Bristol with the church there, lovely people, and then we came home and we did some marriaging. Because we're married, you see. So we'll do a bit of marriaging later, love. I'm married. It's what I am. It's who I am. You know, it's a state of being. We are witnesses. The same with church. You know, well, we did church this morning. Really? Does it mean you're not church now? You mean you sort of stepped out of the body of Christ now? Kind of 10 till 1, you did church. But then you stopped doing church when you got home. Thought, phew, great, I can enjoy myself now. We've done church. People like that, aren't they? Sometimes they say, what are you doing today? Well, I'm going to enjoy myself for the rest of the day. Okay, is this not enjoyable for you? So our understand for Paul, you get the sense of the culture within those churches was one in which they were at home in society, not of the world, but they were at home in the world amongst people. Jesus wasn't just friendly to sinners, he was a friend. The witnesser wants to be friendly in order to get people saved. The witness will be a friend. Jesus was a friend. He was a friend. He didn't just have a friendly disposition to take him through the four steps on his gospel tract. He was a friend. And that takes time. And that means allowing people in. It means being vulnerable and so on and so on and so on. I kind of buy and sell things at a local auction. It's a bit of fun, helps me get a bit of money and so on, and etc. And also, I kid myself that I'm clearing out and everything. I've been going to this auction for 2 or 3 years, and sometimes I can be a bit clumsy. And during the viewing slot, a couple of times I was walking around, and there was a bay of boxes and things, and there was a glass vase on there. And I was trying to get this box behind it, and I knocked the glass vase on the floor. Tsh! Everyone heard it. But for a minute, I thought, no one's seen it. So I went to the office and said, I'm really sorry. I've smashed a vase. She comes out and has a look. Well, it's part of a big lot. The vendor, I don't think the vendor will mind if it's trouble. Okay, thanks. Well, would you believe it? 3 weeks later, I'm in there looking at something else, and it's stacked high. And this stool came off, missed my head, bang, on the floor. I thought, oh, God. The legs are bust and everything. I thought, okay. I goes back into the office. It's you again. I said, you're not going to believe it. I've bust something else. And she said, well, he does stack the stuff up. Blah, blah. Fast forward 3 or 4 weeks ago, our daughter got married. And I had the joy of overseeing that and marrying her and her husband. And I went into the office. I said, I won't be here next week. I've actually got a wedding, so I'll just submit a bid by proxy, whatever. And the person behind me, I said, are you taking it? And so I came home to Bernie. I said, they know. They know I'm a pastor. They know I'm a Christian. And the horrifying thought was, just supposing I'd not fessed up to those two breakages, and it's all on the CCTV, and pastor goes haywire in local auction house but denies it, but it's on film. In one of those readings it says that we are letters that are read, and it's the heart that's read. And they knew, and I kind of started to piece together how they might know. Paul says that to the folks in Corinth, he said, we want you to know that you're a letter that people are going to read. Your life is a letter, and they'll read it by your heart. You're being read all the time. I'm being read. You're reading me now. You come in the door just within a church context, and you're reading all the time. Where's their soul? You're not necessarily analytically going, where's their soul at? But you're picking up, are they happy? Are they down? How are they receiving me? We're being read. We're reading all the time. And Paul said, you're a letter. Your life is a letter that's being read. It's not just a text, you know. Significant information condensed into communication mode. It's not that formulaic. Life isn't formulaic. We're not just a footnote, not just a memo. You're more than a worker. You're a lover of God, a friend of God. You're not just valued for what you can do or what you can't do. He said you're a letter, and a letter has a context. And all of that that goes with that picture, we are living letters read by people. And there's not what, and I haven't used the word evangelism or witnessing or anything in that. You're a living letter and you're being read all the time by people and so on. The heart. And the heart is what people are reading. William Barclay said this, a Christian is someone who makes it easy to believe in God. I like that. Yeah, but what about the cross? And what about the resurrection? And what about the virgin birth? And what about submitting to the kingdom? And what about putting God first? And what about repenting? And we know all that. Yeah, it's okay. The cross is a stumbling block to some. They've got one stumbling block. We don't need to add a whole load of other things. Ideally, people find it easier to believe in God when they meet you. Because they're reading something different. And then occasionally the words are necessary to explain the life. Jesus said, if you don't believe the words, believe the works. The words, they articulate the witness. It's not the witnessing. Giving people a package of information on how to know God, that's just you are the tract that's being read. You, me, us. I've given them a tract, I've done my job. Whew, great. And I did some witnessing. Live a life. Actually, it's like, did they catch my life? Have they caught my heart in somehow? The testimony will explain the faith in some way. To be a witness is to allow people to read the story that's going on in your life. And they'll read it and they'll say, my goodness me. You know, those folks, they had this baby, Jesse. And they got people praying. And they had people in Glastonbury praying. And people all over the place were praying. And you know what? The family didn't fall to bits. And yet they've really had to take on some tough stuff. And you're not witnessing, you're being. Firm foundation. I'm singing it today. And somehow in that mix, someone might say to you, my goodness me, how come you've not fallen apart? And in the mix, you might say, do you know what? It's been really hard, but God's kept us. And we've seen God answer prayer. And somehow the testimony is explaining the life that people have touched. And it's very natural. It's who we are. We don't switch a button on, do we? And become Christian and become non-Christian or whatever. Whether we're in a cafe, whether we're on a street, whether we're in a supermarket or whether we're here gathered together, it should be as easy as breathing to say to someone, if there's an open heart, could we pray together? Living letters read by all people. Live a life worthy of the calling. As uncomfortable as it might seem, you're the tract and I'm the tract that people are reading. And then in that other picture of seed, where Jesus said the field is the world, and he said, I always find real encouragement in this, because it says that the field is the world, and those sown by Jesus are good seed. not just the seed. Jesus said, you are good seed sown into society. You've been given a span of years, however long that might be, and you've been personally sown by the Son of Man into your generation and your context and the years that God gives you to be a good seed in the world. Wow. Sown by God himself. And God sees you as good seed. And this is the other thing about seed. The seed, it doesn't remain a seed. It's sown into the world and it grows up into wheat and takes its place. And our lives are sown into the world. And over time, Christ-likeness forms and you become wheat. And there's a big contrast between the wheat and the weeds. And people see that. And if I join it up with something else Jesus said, he said, people will see your good deeds and they'll give thanks to the Father in heaven. Now, a seed is not going to say, how can I grow? It grows. Sown by Jesus himself into the world. Good seed sown by the Son of Man. Was it Sarah going to Paul? You're a good seed. You haven't got to try and sweat about being a good seed or being good or making a difference. Jesus is sowing you into that context as good seed for people and for his glory, wherever we might be. I'm a bit naughty with our folks back home because we have quite a few retired people who, and I say, you've got loads of time on your hands, you know. Go and join a club. Go and mix with some people. Stop, you know, just go on. Go and just go and mix. Remember what it was like to have friends who were not Christians. Go on, you know, you've forgotten. You've forgotten what it's like. Go on, go out. Go and mix. Go and join a club or something or whatever. Of course, you know, they get back to me and say, actually, we're more busy now. We're retired than we ever. We have grandchildren and we've got this and we've got that. Yeah, I hear that. From others of us, we're working 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week, I don't know, 30, whatever. That is your field. Someone said, God comes to you disguised as your life. God comes to you, and it's a waste of energy to be despising where I am finding myself. Why not embrace it? Actually, this is the field God has sown me in for now. I might want to get out of it soon. That's okay, you can go to another part of the field. But right now, this is where I am. God is with me. I'm sown by the Son of Man himself. And if I'm having to spend 40 or 50 hours a week here, that's okay. I'll do it. And I'll do it in a way that has a Christ-likeness to it with his energy and strength. I make artwork. I trained as an artist, fine artist. And I've just come off the back of quite a busy time. I had a three-week exhibition in Dorset. Then I had my daughter's wedding, which was a four-day event, let alone the build-up to it. And then the weekend of the wedding, I had an exhibition in Bath opened, which I couldn't get to, but I did get in for the last couple of days. And so I love people, don't get me wrong, but at times I need a break from people. I can get peopled out. The last afternoon of the exhibition, I thought, oh, it's a sunny day like today, in the middle of Bath, everyone's outside, hardly anybody are coming into the exhibition. I thought, well, I'll have a bit of time and so on. So here's me in my selfish headspace thinking, you know, God, it's been full on the last little while, sort of. And so I'm in the exhibition, and this chap comes in, he looks around, he goes, oh. So people don't realise what it's like putting an exhibition on, do they? He said, you got to transport your work, you got these people, they see your work, and you put all this effort in, and blah, 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 and you frame it, da, da, da. And he said, are you one of the artists? I said, yeah. So then he spent an hour and 20 minutes offloading all of his, he was a photographer, offloading all of his frustrations about what it's like to be an artist. And it did him good. His wife kept phoning him up saying, when are you coming home? She said, oh, I'll be leaving the gallery in a minute. She goes, have you left? No, I'll be in a minute. He had three calls in an hour and 20 minutes. So he went anyway. And then this lad came in and He seemed really nervous, but he was really taking his time looking at the work. And you could see that he wanted to say something, but perhaps wasn't confident enough to. And he just said a comment. He said, this makes me want to work again. And I said, what, again? And it turned out he was an art student. He did a breakdown at college. But he was starting to get his mojo back, if you like, and wanted to make stuff and everything. And in the grace of God, this exhibition was helping him to do that. And I could see he wanted to say something. So I said, why don't you sign the book? So he spent, you know, probably 10 minutes writing away all his thoughts into the book. And then he saw much time to lock up, and this lady comes in. I've not had a chance to sit down or anything. And this lady comes in, and she's looking around at the work, and she said, are you Tony Martin? And I said, yeah. And she said, I've seen your work in different magazines and bits and bobs. I really like it, but wanting to see it. I said, that's great. You know, you never know who sees the work. And then she asked about where the work was coming from, and I quoted a psalm that says, the boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places, and she started to cry. And she seemed quite a stable person, you know. No, genuinely, I mean, I did. I thought, you know, I hadn't read anything, you know, she's okay. And she said, I can't believe this is happening. And I said, why? I'm condensing. But she said she'd gone back to art college as a mature student. She and her husband lead a church in Bath. Her husband's a vicar. And she was just wondering, what do you do about art and creativity? And she'd liked my work, but she didn't know I was a Christian. I said, actually, I'm a pastor as well. And of course, that was... And so I sent her some details, some books to read and so on and everything. And I'd run over by about an hour. And then I'm trying to lock up and somebody else comes. Anyway, I'm driving home and I'm saying, God, what was all that about? And I felt he say something like this. He said, you think it's about the work on the walls, but actually it's about the people I want you to meet. It's called being a witness. Being. You will be witnesses. You are a witness. And occasionally the mouth will, the testimony, the words are necessary. I know there's that famous verse that says something about preach the gospel, and if you have to, use words. But people take that out of context, because that quote, it does include words. The words are necessary to articulate what's being read as well. Let your speech be seasoned with salt. The salt is a seasoning. If your speech is actually chock-a-block of salt, it's going to be a real turn-off. But little seasoning here and there, it make people think, and so on. We were talking about older people earlier. this is quite a known book, but I guess people read it. Falling Upward, Richard Rohr. Anyone read it? If you want to read a book about the two, that's looking about transition in life, two seasons, early life, later life, and that can be whether you're remembering what it was like to be 14 and now you're 26, or whether you're over 16, you're remembering what it's like to be 40. Whatever it might be, it's about first and second half journeying with God. And he said this about sort of second half season, really. Your concern is not so much to have what you love anymore, but to love what you have right now. There's a monumental change from the first half of life, so much so that it's almost the litmus test of whether you're in the second half of life at all. The rules are all different now, and we often see it in older folks' freedom to give things away, hoarding, possessing, collecting, impressing others with their things, their house, or their travels are of less and less interest to them. Inner brightness, still holding life's sadness and joy, is its own reward, its own satisfaction, and their best and truest gift to the world. Such elders are the grandparents of the world. Children and other adults feel so safe and loved around them. They themselves feel so needed and helpful to children, teens, midlife adults, so on. And they are in their natural flow. Strangely, all of life's problems, dilemmas, and difficulties are now resolved not by negativity, attack, criticism, force, or logical resolution, but always falling into a larger brightness, as the poet Hopkins called it, the dearest freshness deep down in things. This is the falling upward we've been waiting for. One of the guiding principles of our Center for Action and Contemplation puts it this way: the best criticism of the bad is the practice of the better. Be wheat. Don't be a weed. Be wheat. I learned this from my father, St. Francis. I think he was a priest who helped him. Who did not concentrate on attacking evil or others, but just spent his life falling many times into the good, the true, and the beautiful. It was the only way he knew how to fall into God. Such inner brightness ends up being a much better and longer-lasting alternative to evil than any war, anger, violence, or ideology could ever be. All you have to do is meet one such shining person, and you know that he or she is surely the goal of humanity. Remember the Barclay quote, "Christian is someone who makes it easy to believe in God, and their delight is in God." I hope you're becoming that shining person yourself, and this book is helping you to see it, allow it, and trust it. Otherwise, this book too will be just some mere words instead of words becoming flesh. Until it becomes flesh, it cannot shine and shine brightly. I'd drop this book and I'd pick this book up and I'd say exactly the same thing. Unless it becomes a heart and a life that's loving God and loving people and he's able to be read, they're just words on the page. We're not people of the book. We're people of the person, Christ. And the book, we need the book, absolutely. But it helps us come through into the person in a fuller way. I love what Richard Rohr says. He talks about a brightness. It's something sad when you see senior people moaning and grumbling. You think, at least you would have learned some wisdom by now. Some peace in the pain and everything. But you know what? You can have a 12-year-old who shines for God. And so on and so on. It's about how the heart handles what it lives that makes it more Christ-like. I read earlier where Paul said, "Shine like stars amongst a crooked and perverse generation." Holding out the word of life, holding it out amongst people. Three pictures. A letter to be read, a seed that's sown, and a light that shines. Every Christian is called to live. Live life. Don't parcel it up into Christian and religious and non-religious. Don't parcel people up even. Love people. You know, love people. And it says that every now and then you're going to have to, yeah, as a witness, you're going to have to give some test. You're going to have to speak. No use having a witness who doesn't speak. You will speak. But it won't be from a place of having to do it. It's from a place of being somebody, sown by God, loved by God, called by God, honoured by God in the world.